"I am so dreadfully hungry," groaned Bilbo, who was suddenly aware that he had not had a meal since the night before last. "Just think of that for a hobbit!" His stomach felt all empty and loose and his legs all wobbly now that the excitement was over.
"Can't help it," said Gandalf. "Unless you like to go back and ask the goblins nicely to let you have your pony back and your luggage."
"No, thank you," said Bilbo.
"Very well, then. We must just tighten our belts and trudge on, or we shall be made into supper, and that will be much worse than having none ourselves."
As they went on, Bilbo looked from side to side for something to eat. But the blackberries were still only in flower, and of course there were no nuts, nor even hawthorn berries. He nibbled a bit of sorrel, and he drank from a small mountain stream that crossed the path, and he ate three wild strawberries that he found on its bank, but it was not much good. They still went on and on. The rough path disappeared. The bushes and the long grasses between the boulders, the patches of rabbit-cropped turf, the thyme and the sage and the marjoram, and the yellow rock roses all vanished, and they found themselves at the top of a wide, steep slope of fallen stones, the remains of a landslide. When they began to go down this, rubbish and small pebbles rolled away from their feet. Soon larger bits of stone went clattering down and started other pieces below them slithering and rolling. Then lumps of rocks were disturbed and bounded off, crashing down with a dust and a noise. Before long the whole slope above them and below them seemed on the move, and they were sliding away, huddled all together in a fearful confusion of slipping, rattling, cracking slabs and stones. It was the trees at the bottom that saved them. They slid into the edge of a climbing wood of pines that here stood right up the mountain slope from the deeper, darker forests of the valleys below. Some caught hold of the trunks and swung themselves into lower branches. Some, like the little hobbit, got behind a tree to shelter from the onslaught of the rocks. Soon the danger was over, the slide had stopped, and the last faint crashes could be heard as the largest of the disturbed stones went bounding and spinning among the bracken and the pine roots far below.
"Well, that has got us out of it," said Gandalf. "And even goblins tracking us will have a job to come down here quietly."
"I dare say," grumbled Bomber, "but they won't find it difficult to send stones bouncing down on our heads."
The dwarves and Bilbo were feeling far from happy, and were rubbing their bruised and damaged legs and feet.
"Nonsense. We're going to turn aside here out of the path of the slide. We must be quick. Look at the light."
The sun had long gone behind the mountains. Already the shadows were deepening about them, though far away through the trees and over the black tops of those growing lower down, they could still see the evening lights on the plains below. They limped along now as fast as they were able, down the gentle slopes of a pine forest in a slanting path leading steadily southwards. At times they were pushing through a sea of bracken with tall fronds rising right above the hobbit's head. At times they were marching along, quiet as quiet, over a floor of pine needles. And all the while the forest gloom got heavier and the forest silence deeper. There was no wind that evening to bring even a sea sighing into the branches of the trees.
"Must we go any further?" asked Bilbo, when it was so dark that he could only just see Thorin's beard wagging beside him, and so quiet that he could hear the dwarves breathing like a loud noise. "My toes are all bruised and bent, and my legs ache, and my stomach is wagging like an empty sack."
"A bit further," said Gandalf.
After what seemed ages further, they came suddenly to an opening where no trees grew. The moon was up and was shining into the clearing. Somehow it struck all of them as not at all a nice place, although there was nothing wrong to see. All of a sudden they heard a howl away downhill, a long, shuddering howl. It was answered by another way to the right and a good deal nearer to them. Then by another not far away to the left. It was wolves howling at the moon, wolves gathering together. There were no wolves living near Mr. Baggins's hole at home, but he knew that noise. He had had it described to him often enough in tales. One of his elder cousins on the Took side, who had been a great traveller, used to imitate it to frighten him. To hear it out in the forest under the moon was too much for Bilbo. Even magic rings are not much use against wolves, especially against the evil packs that lived under the shadow of the goblin-infested mountains, over the edge of the wild, on the borders of the unknown. Wolves of that sort smell keener than goblins, and do not need to see you to catch you.
"What shall we do? What shall we do?" he cried. "Escaping goblins to be caught by wolves," he said,
and it became a proverb, though we now say, out of the frying pan into the fire, in the same sort of uncomfortable situations.
"Up the trees, quick!" cried Gandalf,
and they ran to the trees at the edge of the glade, hunting for those that had branches fairly low, or were slender enough to swarm up. They found them as quick as ever they could, you can guess, and up they went as high as ever they could trust the branches. You would have laughed, from a safe distance, if you had seen the dwarves sitting up in the trees with their beards dangling down, like old gentlemen gone cracked and playing at being boys. Feely and Keely were at the top of a tall larch like an enormous Christmas tree. Dore, Nore, Ori, Oin, and Gloin were more comfortable in a huge pine with regular branches sticking out at intervals like the spokes of a wheel. Bifer, Bofer, Bomber, and Thorin were in another. Dwalin and Balin had swarmed up a tall, slender fir with few branches, and were trying to find a place to sit in the greenery of the topmost boughs. Gandalf, who was a good deal taller than the others, had found a tree into which they could not climb, a large pine standing at the very edge of the glade. He was quite hidden in its boughs, but you could see his eyes gleaming in the moon as he peeped out. And Bilbo? He could not get into any tree, and was scuttling about from trunk to trunk, like a rabbit that has lost its hole and has a dog after it.
"You've left the burglar behind again," said Nori to Dori, looking down. "I can't be always carrying burglars on me back," said Dori. "Down tunnels and up trees? What do you think I am, a porter?" "He'll be eaten if we don't do something," said Thorin,
for there were howls all round them now, getting nearer and nearer.
"Dori!" he called, for Dori was lowest down in the easiest tree. "Be quick, and give Mr. Baggins a hand up!"
Dori was really a decent fellow, in spite of his grumbling. Poor Bilbo could not reach his hand, even when he climbed down to the bottom branch and hung his arm down as far as ever he could. So Dori actually climbed out of the tree and let Bilbo scramble up and stand on his back. Just at that moment the wolves trotted, howling, into the clearing. All of a sudden there were hundreds of eyes looking at them. Still Dori did not let Bilbo down. He waited till he had clambered off his shoulders into the branches, and then he jumped for the branches himself. Only just in time. A wolf snapped at his cloak as he swung up, and nearly got him. In a minute there was a whole pack of them, yelping all round the tree and leaping up at the trunk, with their eyes blazing and tongues hanging out. But even the wild wargs, for so the evil wolves over the edge of the wild were named, cannot climb trees. For a time they were safe. Luckily it was warm and not windy. Trees are not very comfortable to sit in for long at any time, but in the cold and the wind, with wolves all round below waiting for you, they can be perfectly miserable places. This glade in the ring of trees was evidently a meeting place of the wolves. More and more kept coming in. They left guards at the foot of the trees in which Dory and Bilbo were, and then went sniffing about till they had smelt out every tree that had anyone in it. These they guarded too, while all the rest, hundreds and hundreds it seemed, went and sat in a great circle in the glade. And in the middle of the circle was a great grey wolf. He spoke to them in the dreadful language of the wargs. Gandalf understood it. Bilbo did not, but it sounded terrible to him, and as if all their talk was about cruel and wicked things, as it was. Every now and then all the wargs in the circle would answer their grey chief all together, and their dreadful clamour almost made the hobbit fall out of his pine tree. I will tell you what Gandalf heard, though Bilbo didn't understand it. The wargs and the goblins often helped one another in wicked deeds. Goblins do not usually venture very far from their mountains, unless they are driven out and are looking for new homes, or are marching to war, which I am glad to say has not happened for a long while. But in those days they sometimes used to go on raids, especially to get food or slaves to work for them. Then they often got the wargs to help and shared the plunder with them. Sometimes they rode on wolves like men do on horses. Now it seemed that a great goblin raid had been planned for that very night. The wargs had come to meet the goblins, and the goblins were late. The reason, no doubt, was the death of the great goblin, and all the excitement caused by the dwarves and Bilbo and the wizard, for whom they were probably still hunting. In spite of the dangers of this far land, bold men had of late been making their way back into it from the south, cutting down trees, and building themselves places to live in among the more pleasant woods in the valleys and along the river shores. There were many of them, and they were brave and well armed, and even the wargs dared not attack them if there were many together or in the bright day. But now they had planned, with a goblin's help, to come by night upon some of the villages nearest the mountains. If their plan had been carried out, there would have been none left there next day. All would have been killed except the few the goblins kept from the wolves and carried back as prisoners to their caves. This was dreadful talk to listen to, not only because of the brave woodmen and their wives and children, but also because of the danger which now threatened Gandalf and his friends. The wargs were angry and puzzled at finding them here in their very meeting place. They thought they were friends of the woodmen, and were come to spy on them, and would take news of their plans down into the valleys, and then the goblins and the wolves would have to fight a terrible battle instead of capturing prisoners and devouring people waked suddenly from their sleep. So the wargs had no intention of going away and letting the people up the trees escape, at any rate not until morning. And long before that, they said, goblin soldiers would be coming down from the mountains, and goblins can climb trees, or cut them down. Now you can understand why Gandalf, listening to their growling and yelping, began to be dreadfully afraid, wizard though he was, and to feel that they were in a very bad place, and had not yet escaped at all. All the same, he was not going to let them have it all their own way, though he could not do very much stuck up in a tall tree, with wolves all round on the ground below. He gathered the huge pine combs from the branches of his tree. Then he set one alight with bright blue fire, and threw it whizzing down among the circle of the wolves. It struck one on the back, and immediately his shaggy coat caught fire, and he was leaping to and fro, yelping horribly. Then another came, and another, one in blue flames, one in red, another in green. They burst on the ground in the middle of the circle, and went off in coloured sparks and smoke. A specially large one hit the chief wolf on the nose, and he leapt in the air 10 feet, and then rushed round and round the circle, biting and snapping even at the other wolves in his anger and fright. The dwarves and Bilbo shouted and cheered. The rage of the wolves was terrible to see, and the commotion they made filled all the forest, Wolves are afraid of fire at all times. But this was a most horrible and uncanny fire. If a spark got in their coats, it stuck and burned into them, and unless they rolled over quick, they were soon all in flames. Very soon, all about the glade, wolves were rolling over and over to put out the sparks on their backs, while those that were burning were running about, howling and setting others alight, till their own friends chased them away, and they fled off down the slopes, crying and yammering and looking for water.
"What's all this uproar in the forest tonight?"
said the Lord of the Eagles. He was sitting, black in the moonlight, on the top of a lonely pinnacle of rock at the eastern edge of the mountains.
"I hear wolves' voices. Are the goblins at mischief in the woods?"
He swept up into the air, and immediately two of his guards from the rocks at either hand leapt up to follow him. They circled up in the sky and looked down upon the ring of the wargs, a tiny spot far, far below. But eagles have keen eyes and can see small things at a great distance. The Lord of the Eagles of the Misty Mountains had eyes that could look at the sun unblinking and could see a rabbit moving on the ground a mile below, even in the moonlight. So though he could not see the people in the trees, he could make out the commotion among the wolves and see the tiny flashes of fire and hear the howling and yelping come up faint from far beneath him. Also he could see the glint of the moon on goblin spears and helmets, as long lines of the wicked folk crept down the hillsides from their gate and wound into the wood. Eagles are not kindly birds. Some are cowardly and cruel. But the ancient race of the northern mountains were the greatest of all birds. They were proud and strong and noble-hearted. They did not love goblins or fear them. When they took any notice of them at all, which was seldom, for they didn't eat such creatures, they swooped on them and drove them shrieking back to their caves and stopped whatever wickedness they were doing. The goblins hated the eagles and feared them, but could not reach their lofty seats or drive them from the mountains. Tonight the Lord of the Eagles was filled with curiosity to know what was afoot. So he summoned many other eagles to him, and they flew away from the mountains, and slowly circling ever round and round they came down, down, down towards the ring of the wolves and the meeting place of the goblins. A very good thing, too. Dreadful things had been going on down there. The wolves that had caught fire and fled into the forest had set it alight in several places. It was high summer, and on this eastern side of the mountains there had been little rain for some time. Yellowing bracken, fallen branches, deep piled pine needles, and here and there dead trees were soon in flames. All round the clearing of the wargs fire was leaping. But the wolf guards did not leave the trees. Maddened and angry, they were leaping and howling round the trunks, and cursing the dwarves in their horrible language, with their tongues hanging out, and their eyes shining as red and fierce as the flames. Then suddenly goblins came running up, yelling. They thought a battle with the woodmen was going on. But they soon learned what had really happened. Some of them actually sat down and laughed. Others waved their spears and clashed the shafts against their shields. Goblins are not afraid of fire, and they soon had a plan which seemed to them most amusing. Some got all the wolves together in a pack. Some stacked fern and brushwood round the tree trunks. Others rushed round and stamped and beat and stamped, until nearly all the flames were put out. But they did not put out the fire nearest to the trees where the dwarves were. That fire they fed with leaves and dead branches and bracken. Soon they had a ring of smoke and flame all round the dwarves, a ring which they kept from spreading outwards. But it closed slowly in, till the running fire was licking the fuel piled under the trees. Smoke was in Bilbo's eyes. He could feel the heat of the flames, and through the reek he could see the goblins dancing round and round in a circle like people round a midsummer bonfire. Outside the ring of dancing warriors with spears and axes stood the wolves at a respectful distance, watching and waiting. He could hear the goblins beginning a horrible song.
15 birds in 5 fir trees, their feathers were fanned in a fiery breeze. But funny little birds, they had no wings. Oh, what shall we do with the funny little things? Roast them alive or stew them in a pot. Fry them, boil them, and eat them hot.
Then they stopped and shouted out,
Fly away, little birds, fly away if you can. Come down, little birds, or you'll get roasted in your nests. Sing, sing, little birds, why don't you sing?
Go away, little boys, shouted Gandalf in answer. It isn't bird-nesting time. Also, naughty little boys that play with fire get punished.
He said it to make them angry.